Chapter 9. The More Things Stay the Same. Minor changes to soft furnishings are the first indications of a sideslip. Curtains, cushion covers, and lampshades are all good litmus indicators for a slight diversion in the time stream, the same way as canaries are used down the mines or goldfishes to predict earthquakes. Carpet and wallpaper patterns and changes in paint hues can also be used, but this requires a more practiced eye. If you are within the sideslip, then you will notice nothing. But if your pelmets change colour for no good reason, your curtains switch from festoon to swish, or your antimacassars have a new pattern on them, I should be worried. And if you're the only one who notices, then worry some more. A great deal more. Bendix Scintilla, Time Stream Navigation for CG Cadets Module 4. Landon's absence made me feel unsettled. All sorts of reasons as to why he wasn't waiting for me ran through my head as I pushed open the gate and walked up to our front door. He could have lost track of time, gone to pick up his running leg from the mender's, or dropped in to see his mum. But I was fooling myself. Landon said he would be there, and he wasn't. And that wasn't like him. Not at all. I stopped abruptly halfway up the garden path. For some reason, Landon had taken the opportunity to change all the curtains. I walked on more slowly, a feeling of unease rising within me. I stopped at the front door. The foot scraper had gone, but it hadn't been taken recently. The hole had been concreted over long ago. There were other changes, too. A tub of withered Tichia orologica had appeared in the porch next to a rusty pogo stick and a broken bicycle. The dustbins were all plastic rather than steel, and a copy of Landon's least favourite paper, The Mole, was resting in a newspaper holder. I felt a hot flush rise in my cheeks as I fumbled in vain to find my door key. Not that it would have mattered if I had found it, because the lock I used that morning had been painted over years ago. I must have been making a fair amount of noise, because all of a sudden the door opened to reveal an elderly version of Landon, complete with punch, bifocals and a shiny bald pate. "Yes?" he inquired in a slow Park Lane sort of baritone. Filbert Snood's time aggregation sprang instantly and unpleasantly to mind. "Oh my God, Landon, is that you?" The elderly man seemed almost as stunned as I was. "Me? Good heavens, no!" he snapped and started to close the door. "No one of that name lives here." I jammed my foot against the closing door. I'd seen it done in cop movies, but the reality is somewhat different. I'd forgotten I was wearing trainers and the weatherboard squashed my big toe. I yelped in pain, withdrew my foot and the door slammed shut. "Buggeration!" I yelled as I hopped up and down. I pressed the doorbell long and hard but received only a muffled "Clear off!" for my troubles. I was just about to bang on the door when I heard a familiar voice ring out behind. I turned to find Landon's mum staring at me. "Howson!" I cried. "Thank goodness! There's someone in our house and they won't answer. And Howson?" She was looking at me without a flicker of recognition. "Howson," I said again, taking a step towards her. "It's me, Thursday." She hurriedly took a pace backwards and corrected me sharply. "That's Mrs. Park Lane to you. What do you want?" I heard the door open behind me. The elderly Landon that wasn't had returned. "She's been ringing the doorbell," explained the man to Landon's mother. "She won't go away." He thought for a moment and then added in a quieter voice, "She's been asking about Landon." "Landon?" replied Howson sharply, her glare becoming more baleful by the second. "How is Landon any business of yours? He's my husband." There was a pause as she mulled this over. "Your sense of humour is severely lacking, Miss Whoever you are," she retorted angrily, pointing towards the garden gate. "I suggest you leave." "Wait a minute," I exclaimed, almost wanting to laugh at the situation. "If I didn't marry Landon, then who gave me this wedding ring?" I held up my left hand for them to see, but it didn't seem to have much effect. A quick glance told me why. I didn't have a wedding ring. "Shit," I mumbled, looking around in a perplexed manner. "I must have dropped it somewhere." "You're very confused," said Howson, more with pity than anger. She could see I wasn't dangerous, just positively and irretrievably insane. "Is there anyone we can call?" "I'm not crazy," I declared, trying to get a grip on the situation. This morning, no, less than 2 hours ago, Landon and I lived in this very house. I stopped. Howson had moved to the side of the man at the door. As they stood together in a manner bred of long association, I knew exactly who he was. It was Landon's father, Landon's dead father. "You're Bilden," I murmured. "You died when you tried to rescue..." My voice trailed off. Landon had never known his father. Bilden Park Lane had died saving the 2-year-old Landon from a submerged car 38 years ago. My heart froze as the true meaning of this bizarre confrontation began to dawn. Someone had eradicated Landon. I put out a hand to steady myself, then sat quickly on the garden wall and closed my eyes as a dull thumping started up in my head. Not Landon. Not now, of all times. "Bilden," announced Howson. "You had better call the police." "No!" I shouted, opening my eyes and glaring at him. "You didn't go back, did you?" I said slowly, my voice cracking. "You didn't rescue him that night. You lived, and he..." I braced myself for his anger, but it never came. Instead, Bilden just stared at me with a mixture of pity and confusion on his face. "I wanted to," he said in a quiet voice. I swallowed my emotion. "Where's Landon now? If we tell you," asked Howson in a slow and patronizing tone, "will you promise to go away and never come back?" She took my silence for assent and continued. "Swindon Municipal Cemetery. And you're right. Our son drowned 38 years ago." "Shit!" I cried, my mind racing as I tried to figure out who might be responsible. Howson and Bilden took a fearful step backwards. "Not you," I added hastily. "God damn it, I'm being blackmailed. You should report that to Spec Ops. They wouldn't believe me any more than you." I paused and thought for a moment. "Howson, I know you have a good memory, because when Landon did exist, you and I were the best of pals. Someone has taken your son, my husband, and believe me, I'll get him back. But listen to me, I'm not crazy, and here's how I can prove it. He's allergic to bananas, has a mole on his neck, and a birthmark the shape of a lobster on his bum. How could I know that unless..." "Oh, yes?" said Howson slowly, staring at me with growing interest. "This birthmark. Which cheek? The left. Looking from the front or looking from the back?" "Looking from the back," I said without hesitating. There was silence for a moment. They looked at each other, then at me. And in that instant, they knew. When Howson spoke, it was in a quiet voice, her temper transplanted with a sadness all her own. "How? How would he have turned out?" She started to cry, large tears that rolled uninhibited down her cheeks. Tears of loss, tears for what might have been. "He was wonderful," I returned gratefully. "Witty and generous and tall and clever. You would have been so proud." "What did he become?" "A novelist," I explained. "Last year he won the Armitage Shanks Fiction Award for Bad Sofa. He lost a leg in the Crimea. We were married 2 months ago." "Were we there?" I looked at them both and said nothing. Howson had been there, of course, shedding tears of joy for us both. But Bilden, well, Bilden had swapped his life for Landon's when he returned to the submerged car and ended up in the Swindon Municipal Cemetery instead. We stood for a moment or two, the three of us lamenting the loss of Landon. Howson broke the silence. "I think it would really be better for all concerned if you left now," she said quietly. "And please don't come back." "Wait," I said. "Was there someone there, someone who stopped you from rescuing him?"
"More than one," replied Bilden. 5 or 6, one woman. I was sat upon."
"Was one a Frenchman, tall, distinguished-looking, named Lavoisier, perhaps?"
"I don't know," answered Bilden sadly. "It was a long time ago."
"You really have to leave now," repeated Howson in a forthright tone. I sighed, thanked them, and they shuffled back inside and closed the door. I walked out of the garden gate and sat in my car, trying to contain the emotion within me so I could think straight. I was breathing heavily, my hands were clenched so tightly on the steering wheel my knuckles showed white. How could Spec Ops do this to me? Was this Flanker's way of compelling me to talk about my father? I shook my head. Futzing with the time stream was a crime punishable by almost unimaginable brutality. I couldn't imagine Flanker would have risked his career and his life on a move so rash. I took a deep breath and leaned forward to press the starter button. As I did so, I glanced into my wing mirror and saw a Packard parked on the other side of the road. There was a well-dressed figure leaning on the wing, nonchalantly smoking a cigarette and looking in my direction. It was Shithouse. He appeared to be smiling. Suddenly, the whole plan came into sharp focus. Jack Shit. What had Shithouse threatened me with? Corporate impatience? My anger re-established itself. Muttering bastard under my breath, I jumped out of the car and walked briskly and purposefully towards Shithouse, who stiffened slightly as I approached. I ignored a car that screeched to a halt inches from me, and as Shithouse took a pace forward, I put out both hands and pushed him hard against the car. He lost his footing and fell heavily to the ground. I was quickly upon him, grabbed his shirt lapels and raised a fist to punch him. But the blow never fell. In my blind anger, I had failed to see that his associates, Chalk and Cheese, were close by, and they did their job admirably, efficiently and, yes, painfully too. I fought like hell and was gratified that in the confusion I managed to kick Shithouse hard on the kneecap. He yelped in pain. But my victory, such as it was short-lived. I must have been a tenth of their combined weight, and my struggles were soon in vain. They held me tightly, and Shithouse approached with an unpleasant smile etched upon his pinched features. I did the first thing I could think of. I spat in his face. I never tried it before, but it turned out delightfully. I got him right in the eye. He raised the back of his hand to strike me, but I didn't flinch. I just stared at him, anger burning in my eyes. He stopped, lowered his hand, and wiped his face with a crisply laundered pocket handkerchief. You are going to have to control that temper of yours next. That's Mrs. Park Lane to you. Not any more. If you'd stop struggling, perhaps we could talk sensibly, like adults. You and I need to come to an arrangement. I gave up squirming and the two men relaxed their grip. I straightened my clothes and glared at Shithouse, who rubbed his knee. What sort of arrangement? I demanded. A trade, he answered. Jack Shit for Landon. Oh, yes? I retorted. And how do I know I can trust you? You can't and you don't, replied Shithouse simply. But it's the best offer you're going to get. My father will help me. Shithouse laughed. Your father is a washed-out clock jockey. I think you overestimate his chances and his talents. Besides, we've got the summer of 1947 locked down so tight, not even a transtemporal gnat could get back there without us knowing about it. Retrieve Jack from the Raven, and you can have your own dear hubby back. And how do you propose I do that? You're a resourceful and intelligent woman. I'm sure you'll think of something. Do we have a deal? I stared hard at him, shaking with fury. Then, almost without thinking, I had my automatic pressed against Shithouse's forehead. I heard two safety catches click off behind me. Associates Chalk and Cheese were fast too. Shithouse seemed unperturbed. He smiled at me in a supercilious manner and ignored the weapon. You won't kill me next, he said slowly. It's not the way you do things. It might make you feel better, but believe me, it won't get your Landon back. And Mr. Chalk and Mr. Cheese would make quite sure you were dead long before you hit the asphalt. Shithouse was good. He'd done his homework and he hadn't underestimated me one little bit. I'd do all I could to get Landon back, and he knew it. I reholstered my pistol. Splendid, he enthused. We'll be hearing from you in due course, I trust.